listening Dog Media.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Rocket with Kieran Bracken and Nick Easter. The Rugby Podcast that doesn't take itself too seriously.
Hello and welcome to Rucket. Today, myself and Kieran will be talking about Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Should it, shouldn't it be banned? Should we use it as an educational piece? The RFU are calling for it to be banned. We'll be talking about the global season again. And we'll also be talking about our worst and best roommates, plus plenty more to follow on Rucket.
Rucket with Kieran Bracken and Nick Easter.
So, Nick, I'm not being funny. I've got to mention it. The attire this morning, either you've just been for a run, you're going for a run, or you're just trying to flex those muscles to make me feel like a week back. But that's some luck you've got. I've got to say, that is some luck. It's like you've come out of, I don't know, a park over in, you know, over in America. And
say what you really think, Brax. What, you know, what's the term?
No, listen, yeah.
You are correct, mate. I am gymming after this. It's too early to do it before that. But
right, yeah.
And you've got to also remember, Brax, we're now entering the hottest week. So plenty of barbecues, plenty of tops off.
Yeah.
Got to get that sun cream on you and get the tan up, mate. And we're in the hottest week this week. So
listen, at the end of this podcast, I'm going to make you very jealous. I'm going to show you the pool of my garden.
I'll show you the pool in mine, shall I, as well?
All right, we'll see. We'll see who's got the biggest pool. This is like a comparison in the showers, isn't it?
Mate, it's not all about size, mate. You know that, Brax. You know that.
Listen,
you built your career on that.
I was going to say, you'll have noticed that I'm growing my hair. I've not sort of cut it yet, and there's a reason.
I haven't noticed that, mate.
And it's all right. That's true. I like it. But there's a reason for that. I read in the papers, I think it was called The Spectator, my father-in-law sent it to me, but did you know that bald men, okay, are more likely to suffer severe symptoms of COVID-19 than any other person, race? Bald men, did you know, are more likely to suffer mostly from it, statistically?
Well, that sounds like a load of tripe again, just like... I tell you what, who you remind me of there. You remind me of the group of Americans. I think it was about 34% of them that stopped drinking Corona beer because they thought that gave the virus to people.
Oh my God!
In the same intellectual stage as them, mate. If you believe that,
mate. But listen, here's some good news. I don't know what you're doing with your club, Wimbledon, but had our first training session with Wanstead Rugby Club. Met all the guys. Great bunch of lads. And we had what you would call a round robin of, I don't know, let's call it seven different
stations.
Stations. Yeah, you have a bit of fitness, a bit of speed, a bit of strength work. I was doing the 3-on-3 netball game, and then I had the number nines for like an hour. That was all right. It was good. I mean, everyone was just gagging to be outside, throwing a ball with their mates. And I think perhaps they're going to... go from 2 meters to 1 meter very soon, and it's going to be your rugby players are going to be allowed to do a bit more. I guess you haven't had the chance to go down to your club, or they're not opening.
No, they're making a decision. Yet. I think they're making a decision this week, so then we'll find out. But it seems to have sped up, doesn't it? Sort of okay, we'll call it back to normal, although obviously it's going to be slightly changed, isn't it? The new normal,
yeah.
But you know, as you say, mate, I think Boris wants to get the economy back on track, mate. He's making a big push for it. Pubs are looking to open earlier than they previously were. Premier League started, obviously Rugby New Zealand started. And as you say, sort of even lower league rugby, which is great news, really, because, you know, the top professional leagues can deal with it. They got the finances for the testing and what have you. But you know, it was the lower leagues and the sort of social game, if you like, that was going to suffer. And, you know, I think cricket will be back as well, pretty soon as well, because, you know, rugby's obviously struggling. We've discussed this many times, and anyone that knows the game, it's probably the hardest sport to bring back in a situation like this, given the number of contacts and close contacts you have. Yeah. But cricket less so, and I think that's sort of looking to obviously come back in the next couple of weeks. And as long as the sort of numbers keep falling, and you know, it's looking quite positive. We don't want to speak too soon, but ultimately, mate, everything you read and hear from even the experts is still speculation, isn't it? And you just sort of have to take each week or each day as it comes.
No, absolutely, and I think rugby's got much more challenges than most other sports. But I suppose the talking point this week has been about the banning of swing low, and lots of articles written about it. And I guess, really, I did a bit of research. It was Wallace Willis, who was a freed Oklahoma slave, who wrote the song. And actually, I think, to be fair to most rugby folk, whichever colour you are, you know, most people don't know the connotations or who wrote it of the song. You know, the contents of which talk about, you know, refer to the conditions of being a slave and hoping for freedom and a better life. But I guess, you know, first thing, I'm a bit confused. I read that it was brought about by, I think it was when Chris Oatey first played for England, scored a hat trick, and people started singing. But then someone said, no, it was Martin of Fire in the Sevens, Chariots of Fire. So I don't know the answer to that. Maybe our listeners can tell us.
Well, I think the only person who know the answer is probably whoever first started singing it there. And I think a lot, you know, I'll come on to sort of my viewpoint in a moment. But I would imagine, because Martin of Fire's nickname was Chariots,
yes,
someone or a group of people went to the game and thought, well, you know, the Swing Low Sweet Chariot, probably not knowing the origins, or I'd imagine didn't know the origins at all. I mean, I certainly didn't, you know, when I first started singing it and hearing it at Twickenham and, you know, and obviously at university rugby and school rugby and all that sort of stuff, when you're introduced with all the hand gestures and all of that sort of stuff, and then acting out and all of that sort of stuff. But I'd imagine, you know, with the sort of Chariots of Fire line, that might be, again, you know, it's speculation, I don't know, but it might be why they sort of introduced it. And, you know, I think it was a tribute, actually, you know, to the quality of player he was. I'm just assuming this, but, you know, the guy was a legend player, scoring loads of tries in that particular Sevens tournament. And it was sort of a tribute to his song, a little bit like the sort of Maro Itoje, you know, when they go, oh, Maro Itoje. You know, it's a sign of adulation and respect. But look, you don't know until the person or the group of people that first sung it, allegedly in 1987, let you know that. But I think...
Alfonso. I keep getting it wrong. Yeah, Maggie Alfonso.
Keep getting it wrong,
the
mate.
Only female black council member now, the RFU, wants to be president of the RFU, did say that she didn't know the background to the song, and she never really, until someone told her, and she was absolutely horrified. And since then, she decided never ever to sing it. But she said it's, you know, she doesn't want it banned, but she thinks people should be educated and understand and make a decision. And the question will be is, are the RFU going to ban it, or are they going to ask people to use common sense? So it's interesting, but you do have other people to the other side say, well, come on, this is this is getting ridiculous, you know, now we're getting so politically correct. I don't know the answer. I guess, though...
I've stolen this from a journo friend of mine who wrote a brilliant piece. And, you know, I'll just sort of educate our listeners and you and myself a little bit more. And he's done quite a bit of research on this because, again, as you say, you know, is PC, you know, a little bit PC heavy, isn't it? You know, it's a song that's, look, a lot of people sung that didn't know its origins and what have you. And I think it's important to educate now that they do. And, you know, with this bit, this Black Lives Movement and, you know, talking about the slavery and everything, I think it's been great that, you know, it's been brought to the fore and people's attention. And it should be used as a part of history. How are you going to try and ban someone singing a song? I just don't know. And, you know, I think there's more important matters to contend with within, you know, diversity and everything, especially within the RFU. But this is from, you know, the journo. I sort of, you know, he he forwarded it to me. I thought it was an absolutely brilliant piece, but these are just sort of snippets. It's, okay, you've mentioned, you know, where the origins came from, but in 2002, it was included in Songs of the Century by the Recording Industry Association of America and the National Institute of Arts. It's obviously, over years, been culturally and artistically celebrated with its meaning, you know, revered as a reference point to unacceptable times, you know, times of slavery, you know, back in, you know, I think it was the 1800s. But it was so offensive back in 1939 to the right-wing regime of Germany, the Third Reich.
Germany, yeah, I read that.
They tried
yeah.
to ban it, right? And during the 1960 civil rights movement and the struggle, the song enjoyed a resurgence, and it was performed by a number of different artists, you know, fighting and campaigning for the civil rights of, you know, Black Americans, African Americans in particular. It was sung at the Woodstock Festival as well by certain famous artists. So apart from the RFU and the RFU Council finding it offensive, the only other group of people that found it offensive a far right, all
for
white,
the Germans.
Fascist dictators, right? And you're just thinking, give it a little bit of context here. So you've got yeah. to be able to distinguish, actually, how people who absolutely, you know, they sing the song, they might not know the background, the origins, but just because the origin, okay, and it's a beautiful song, sung by a freed slave, as you mentioned, you're dreaming of better times, I think that should be celebrated. And I don't think it should be looked upon like this. And I think the bigger issue is the RFU using it as a scapegoat for their underlying problems, as you've mentioned, and we mentioned last week, in terms of the lack of ethnic diversity they've got, you know, within their headquarters, within their HQ.
Oh, yeah.
They're using it as, we've got to be seen to be doing something here, because what we don't want to be doing is trying to, you know, mix up
Nick,
the 450 employees they've got, mate. Back in 2012, the 450 employees, they had two ethnic members.
I mean, it's nuts, isn't it? I know you said, but
and they're trying to blame a song now.
The irony of it all, though, is that the RFU have used the slogan "Carry them home," and it's all over the stadium, absolutely everywhere. So it's a bit like
and the RFU also seem to be happy to play the Eminem song "Lose Yourself," which is all about shooting people, and like loads of profanity in it. I mean, mate, they're a complete.
I actually don't think that the people at Twickenham are going to sing it anymore. I actually think people will think twice about it. I mean, it's important to educate, but in a way, like you say, let's put it in context. But there was a great article and a great reference to all of this by, you know, Dan Leo. Do you follow him on Twitter?
The Western
Samoan guy. And he talks about slavery within rugby. He said that when Tonga come to play England in this autumn, let's keep our fingers crossed that it actually goes ahead. But he's saying those players, those Tongan players, will be getting £100 for the match. And he said the England players, what do they get? 25 grand a match. He says there, right there, that shows massive inequality. And he calls it slavery. Or maybe not him, maybe the writer does. And it made you think, actually, in a way, there's something in that, isn't there? There's actually something in that.
This is the thing, mate, is people are now pointing the finger and trying to rewrite or erase history without any sort of context and understanding, you know what? Nothing's perfect. No one's perfect. Everyone's got their flaws. And you learn from history to make the world a better place, ideally. And what we're doing now, you know, who's going to look in 100 years' time and say, oh, my God, I can't believe they did that. That's so offensive, right? Especially the way we're going. You've got to deal with the real issues. That, to me, is a real issue and always has been.
Yeah.
How they've treated the South Sea Island players is nothing short of disgraceful and disrespectful and actually... I understand that, and we don't want to get too much into the sort of semantics of it all, but I understand the language used there, because ultimately with the coffers getting filled in the Tier 1 nations and especially at the RFU, the proportion given to sort of the struggling Tier 2 nations and, you know...
Shocking, isn't it? I mean,
the quality of rugby they bring, the quality of player, you know... They're meant to provide, you know, a full international team on a shoestring with very, very limited time, hardly any facilities, you know, asking for favours throughout the country when they come, you know, rugby clubs. I know they used us, you know, they trained with us a couple of years ago. Samoa did at Quinn's, and we sort of put, you know, helped them out with sort of local hotels and what have you. And you just think, you know, surely this is more important than a song that's sung, which actually celebrates everything that's good in rugby.
It's, you say that, and you look at, I mean, you normally look, I just can't understand why England, you know, the richest rugby sort of council in the world wouldn't look at that and say, hang on a sec, this is just frightfully unfair. We've got 80,000 people, maybe it won't be 80,000 for Tonga, maybe 60,000 people with all the hospitality they're probably making, and they've got a bit of TV money. I guess the TV money will be shared with Tonga, but also I can just imagine that actually £100 each. I mean, if there's ever slavery, that's it right there. And I think there was talks some time ago of, you know, sharing some of the match fees with these. Do you think the players should make a stand? I think that would be a good idea.
Well, you know what? I mean, it's been mooted before, isn't it? But it only takes one, you know, one sort of person to sort of start the ball rolling. And we've had that with Marcus Rashford, haven't we? With the fantastic sort of food voucher money campaign he had, where he raised 20 million or just over. Yeah. And I think if that happens to be the case, look, you know, it's been quoted as £100. It might not be £100 exactly and everything, but we know for damn sure, being involved in the game and speaking to them, how the money's divvied up. They've really been shortchanged over the years, and, you know, continue this year if the game goes ahead. But I think you might see a few Marcus Rashfords within England squad for that particular game. You know, whoever else they're playing as well.
I agree. And it wouldn't be a wonderful thing to do for the players who are, you know, richly rewarded when they play for England, because us players back in the 2000s went on strike for the likes of you, for your wages to go up. But I do think there's such inequality. I think it's about time we did something. And unfortunately, I think we've got to change the rules as well for these, you know, teams like Samoa and Tonga. I'd like to see the likes of Bilivanapola, when they retire from England, to go back and play for them. So I'd like to change the rules in that respect. I'd like to get them more game time. I'd like them get them, you know, playing against Australia, South Africa, New Zealand more. You know, they hardly ever play them anymore because there's no money in it for them. It's all about the money. And we've got to become more equal. And I think that's probably more of an important story than and getting rid of the song of Swing Low. But just
on the subject of songs.
Yeah, yeah.
The most offensive song, especially for an Englishman, whether you're, you know, whatever ethnic origin, is the Flower of Scotland now.
Flower of Scotland, yeah, yeah.
Talking
yeah.
about killing the English back in 1314, Battle of Bannockburn, like literally a millennial ago.
I was going to ask, and
that's actually offensive. So if they're going to ban any song at Twickenham, they say, you know what? If we're going to ban Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, we're going to ban Flower of Scotland, because we take offence to the fact that you're referencing our ancestors getting murdered at the hands of you. Well, not murdered. Yeah, actually.
Just one killed. Win. It's just one or two wins, and they're just. That's the other thing. It just dawned on me. I was going to ask you, what's your favourite and least favourite songs that you've heard, whether national anthems or cult songs at matches? Yeah, because there's quite a few. We've played around the world and you've heard...
Oh, mate, mine was easily the French national anthem. Mate.
Marseille, oh, really?
I used to sing along to it. So whether we were at home or away, first or second, I always used... Well, not sing, because I don't know the words, but I used to hum along to it. Yeah. I loved it, mate. I absolutely loved it. And I also like the Allez les Bleus, because you always used to get inspired, you know, going back to sort of rugby. I always found, you know, away from home, playing in the hotbeds of rugby away from home was the real challenge. And what, you know, really stoked the fires playing for me, but really stoked the fires. And you know, proving yourself against the best on their home patch. And, you know, I managed to sort of separate sort of the emotion of the crowd from actually doing your job and the focus in the game. But I still enjoyed and was aware, you know, even when it was Swing Low, Sweet Chariot or the crowd was getting behind you at Twickenham, you're still aware of how much, you know, extra that can impart on the home side. And I certainly see it as a challenge when they got behind the French. And as I said, you know, during the anthems, I used to hum that every single time. Love it. Absolutely.
You get to that point, Marshall. But I tell you, I mean, I played in Paris a few times, and I played when they were actually a really good team. And holy shit, they did the anthems. Absolutely amazing. Cockerels on the pitch, all sorts. And then suddenly the game went. And this was at a time where they were expected to express themselves. And every time there was a pass, a bit like in football, you know, ole, ole. And I remember at one stage, they must have had about 40 passes, 20 phases, scoring a corner, all the crowd, every second, ole, ole. And it was like chasing shadows. It was horrible. Castagnet, Philippe Seller, all of these amazing players. But what about, yeah, so the flower of Scotland's always quite a, you know, it's quite patriotic, isn't it? And it got the bagpipes in the middle of the pitch, and it was like, Jesus, it'd be freezing cold and it'd be raining, of course. That was quite tough. But landing my father in Wales is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, especially the Millennium Stadium, the cacophony. Because the Welsh,
and their sound, and
in all fairness, the Welsh can sing. They can sing.
What about?
I tell you what, I'd love to. I asked this during when I was playing, sort of middle of my England career, when I watched Zulu and then Men of Harlech. Remember they sing Men of Harlech?
Yeah.
And I was like, why don't they sing that? And they used to sing it, and they sing it, I think, Cardiff City. I could be wrong here, but Cardiff City, right. You know, the football supporters and everything. But that's another wonderful song, you know, to hear sort of reverberating around a large stadium. And, I remember asking, you know, a few of the Welsh players, said, not that they're in charge, obviously, of what the crowd sing, but, have you ever heard them sing that? They said, no, we haven't heard them sing it. So it'd be great to sort of, that could be their Swing Low, if you like, the sort of the second anthem that they sing.
Why are Wales and Scotland allowed to sing those songs when it should be their national anthems, which is God Save Our Gracious Queen? No, I think in 2004 that Scotland tried to have their own national anthem to be Flower of Scotland, and it got put in the back burner. Yeah, so I always wondered.
Like everything else Scotland campaigned for, mate. You never get off the ground, does it?
I had a bet with a mate, a Scottish mate. I said, if and I was up there at the game, I think you might have been playing, and I said, listen, if England lose today, I will, in the middle of a pub, I'll sing your national anthem. Okay? So Scotland beat England. I can't remember. It must be... You probably know when they last won it up in Murrayfield. And I basically stood in this pub and I started singing God Save Our Gracious Queen. And they're all like, hang on a sec, you said you'd sing our anthem. And I said, I am singing your anthem.
Yeah, exactly.
God Save Our Gracious Queen. So it was like, heads I win, tails you lose. It was quite good. What about the South Africa anthem's pretty good as well, isn't it? You don't like it?
No, it's so long because they sing. They sing both, don't they? They sing.
Well, what about the Irish one as well? The Irish one that, you know, Ireland.
Yeah, but that's the
new one.
Ireland's call. They only sing at home, don't they?
Okay. All right.
I think. Yeah, that's good. When they get that going away, that's good.
Don't think much of the Aussie.
I think the Aussie one's a bit wet. Advance Australia. Oh, yeah.
We're going to get so much abuse on this. This is good. I'm liking it. But on a more lighter note, I just thought I saw an interview with Ellis Genge. I don't know why, who refers to me as sausages. I'm sort of drawn to things that he says.
Oh, I think it's the sausage skin on the top of your head, mate.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. Something like that. But it's about more testosterone apparently than anyone else if you go on board. But Ellis Genge was talking about the first time he went into camp, like a representative level. I don't know whether it was England or I think he's in the Midlands, and he was shut out of a few of the rooms. He knocked on their doors and tried to go in and have a bit of crack and just see what people were up to, and they basically pretended no one was in there, and I think eventually he opened the door and he had a thing of water and threw it in their face, and he was quite combative, and he was just saying that when he went to England camp, he was very nervous of people around, and he couldn't believe James Haskell was talking to him. So he was like, what does he want? Does he want something? So, you know, he said he came from a tough background and found it hard to fit in, you know, with rugby being, you know, domineered by white people and a white man's game. So he was talking about that. Sort of made me think about all the roomies that I'd had over the years. I played for 10 years, similar amount of caps as you, probably, you know, spanned over a longer period. I was just thinking of your best and worst and funniest roomie, and that I remember my first roomie was a guy called Graham Dorr from down in Cornwall. And if anyone has seen a forward with fingers like bananas, I mean, these fingers were just honestly incredible. He's a great player. He used to travel to Bath, 3-hour journey. He used to travel twice a week up to train at Bath, and then and obviously play and then drive back. And he basically was a farmer. So when I met him, I didn't know much about him. And I'm rooming with him first day. He's like, congratulations, well done. And anyway, 6 a.m, I hear this radio come on, and I'm like, what is going on? And I'm looking around the room, and I think the TV's on, and I'm, what the fuck is that noise? And all I can hear is, oh, around the coast, 314, there's 33. And I was just thinking, what's this fucking sound? So what he had was, he had this little, at 6 o'clock in the morning, he had farming news of lost sheep and weather, all right, under his pillow. And after like 20 minutes, I was like, Graham, what's that? And he goes, don't shut up. I'm listening to the news down on my farm. And I'm, listen, he was an animal. And I got on really well with him, right? But I made the biggest mistake. I was just turned 21. I was at university. I was a bit of a shit, really, bit of a crack, always having a bit of banter. I was good friends with Mike Catt, who was next door. So this biggest mistake you can ever do, right? This is a true story. So this is my first week. I've not even played for England. I'm training. I'm all excited. I'm not in the squad yet because Darren Morris is still starting. Eventually he pulled out. But on one of the evenings, right, Wednesday evening, Graham Dawes says to me, here, have you got any shaving foam? And I said, oh, no, I haven't got. I said, Mike Catt's got some. So he's in his little Y front. So he goes out of my room, to next door, knocks on the door to Mike Catt, gets some shaving foam, and then he comes into my room, right? He's not taking the key with him, so I've left the door, I've closed the door on him, and I can see through the little hole. Now bear in mind, this is the Petersham Hotel in Richmond, where the public actually also stayed in the hotel along with the England team. And I can see through the hole, I can see him there with his shaving foam one hand, all right, okay. And he's in his little Y fronts, and he's trying to get in. And I can see public going like through the corridor, like looking at this half naked man. And he's going, Kieran, open the door. And I'm like, no. What's the special password, right? And this is 5 minutes, and the people are walking past. He goes, here, if you don't open this door, I'm going to kick your fucking head in. I'm telling you now, right? So after a bit, after 5, 6, 7 minutes of this, I'm thinking, he's not very happy. This is probably not a wise move. I said, do you promise me that you're not going to punch me when you come in? He goes, I promise. I said, promise on your daughter's life. He said, I promise on my daughter's life. He opened the door and he went crack straight in my face like you would not believe. So yeah, he smacked me. And that was my rude awakening to have a bit more respect for the senior players. What about you? Who was your first roomie?
That cheeky scrum half. I remember, mate, well, before I get on to my roommate, I came across Graham Dorr few times. I was playing for Oral early in my professional career, and he was down at Plymouth then. He left Bath. He was playing for Plymouth for full time. And this was back in the day when rucking was rucking, you know, and everything get away with. And I just remember being over the ball a few times and just getting absolutely pummeled. So you're not the only one on this podcast being punched by. I remember he used to punch me about 6 times to get me off the ball like that. And I was just like, fucking hell, ref, what are you going to do about this? Do you know what I mean? Like, their own ground, and they're quite decent support down there. And, you know, referees at sort of a championship level, you know, they were massive homers as well. And every single time, you know, I found my face getting pummeled. It was him, because he was obviously, and he was, to be fair to him, mate, he was a very fit man. He was about 40 or something like that as well when he was playing.
50. He's almost 50.
No. When he retired, he was 50. I'm saying back then he was 40. He was about 40. He played for another 10 years. Yeah, he was a very, very fit man and obviously loved the game. And afterwards, I think we won the game actually, but afterwards he sort of came up to me in a bar, bought me a pint, just goes, mate, He was complimenting me on my play. He goes, mate, you know, the best person we've had over the ball for a while and everything like that. And she goes, because I was pissed off. I was so pissed off with him.
That
the referee and the touch judge hadn't seen this. They weren't refereeing it properly. I come away with two black eyes, all of that sort of stuff. Cuts in my mouth. And he goes, look, I can see you. I won't bother doing the accent, but I can see you're upset with me. But, you know, here's a few points on me, mate, and take it as a badge of honour that it took so many to get you off the ball like that. And I thought, oh, fair play. And I was quite pleased with myself after that.
That's all right.
Games changed quite a bit, mate. Rucking's no longer shooing and punching to get people off the ball. But anyway, back to I suppose there's a couple of different reasons. Obviously, I can't go into the sort of, these sort of airways debauched details of my best roommates and what was going on.
You said earlier, listen, get it all out there. This is
for different reasons. Worst, similar, actually same position, same country, Steve Thompson. Right. Suffered horrendously from psoriasis, didn't he?
Shocking.
Skin flaking disease.
Itching. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly. So I used to just wake up. But the thing is, he had treatment for it and he had this, you know, lotion or whatever it was. And it actually worked. But he was so lazy and, you know, I don't know, just belligerent and thought, you know, I'm going to do it by natural remedy that he didn't always put it on. He only put it on like if it was really, really causing him, you know, irritation, pain or whatever. Yeah. So I used to just get woken up all the time by the itching and scratching in the middle of the
night. Are you sure it was itching and scratching?
Are you sure? But and the duvet that you know the sheet was stuck to him. And I'm not sure that was the itching and scratching.
Oh, that's disgusting!
But it was like a snowstorm in the morning as well, mate. But and the other thing is, he used to get up early. So not only was I woken up by all this itching and scratching and tossing and turning, he used to get up and same as Graham Dorr about 6 o'clock. The other guy, good mate of mine, I think he had me down as his worst roommate, actually, for another reason, but room with him for quite a bit with England was Ugo Monya.
Right. Okay.
Now, for different reasons, this guy looks after himself. You know, he's very considerate of you and all that, except I would, you know, when you're with England, and obviously I'm a fatty forward, you try and look after your diet and your nutrition, you know, in terms of, you know, the proportion of carbs and, you know, protein, all that sort of stuff. And he used to invite a few of the other guys, like Dellen Armitage used to come in the room, you know, Sips, whoever it was, all skinny backs, you know, that need to eat to put on weight. And he used to invite him in around 10:30 at night. And it was good crack, good banter. But they all used to order a shed load of white bread sandwiches, an apple crumble and ice cream, right?
And you couldn't have anything.
Yeah. And I would just say, I was like, please, can you do this around someone else's room like this or one of the other lads' rooms? No, he would do it in his room. And he used to order absolute boatloads of it. And I used to just be sat in bed like this. And I have to admit, Brax, mate, I just didn't have the willpower. I just couldn't help myself. So he used to tuck into it. Get your body fat measure the next day. I did so well yesterday up until about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night when I just let it all go.
But I like what you were saying earlier about you're quite guarded about your favorite roommates. But I had a couple of favorite roommates when I was. These are the days when I was single. But I think we both of us happily married would rather just let that lie. One of my worst roommates was Stuart Barnes. So, God, this is the amateur days. I remember basically England. They lost, and Rob Andrew was the 10 and he had a shocker. And then the next match, Jack Rowell picked him again and Stuart Barnes didn't get a look in. And he had a big flare up with Jack Rowell about not being picked. And that evening he came back to the room and he ordered a bottle of wine, another bottle of wine. And I wasn't really a big drinker. He ordered me a beer. But anyway, for 2 hours, he just waxed lyrical about how much better he was than Rob Andrew, and it's all a disgrace. And then he'd start reading poetry, and then he'd fall asleep, and he would snore the whole night, and it would go on for the whole week. Two bottles of wine, or a bottle of wine at least, every night, and then just rip into the coach for not picking him. And I would be there as a young lad, having to say, "Yeah, I think you should be playing. I think you're really good. I think you should be in." I mean, it was a load of bollocks. Bollocks should he be in? He couldn't tackle. He's a good little player.
Yeah, but see, yeah. There's always a lot of snorers, aren't there, that you come across. Oh. The worst was Chris Robshaw at Quinns, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, he's got a little schnoz on him, so you know, there's plenty of airways there to get out. But we used to go to Millfield a couple of years in a row. I think Dean Richards, being cheap, you know, never warm weather training. Let's go as cost effective as possible. Went to Millfield. Slept in the girls' dormitories, right? The single beds, which were about 5 foot long. It was just horrendous, and it was the hardest training week of pre-season. Anyway, he and obviously their dormitories are very, you know, very thin partition walls. He had to sleep in the boys' dormitory because we could hear his snoring throughout the corridors, throughout the floors. He was on the first floor, we could hear him on the ground floor, whatever it was. After two nights, he was slung into a completely separate building. It was that bad.
From then on,
I don't think he ever had a roommate at Quinns. It was, you're captain, you get your own room.
There's nothing worse than a snorer, is there, the night before a game, especially. But speaking of Chris Robshaw, there was talk a few months ago of him going to America, but now he's definitely going to San Diego Legion for 2 years. You played with him. I mean, he seems like a real sort of fantastic captain, fantastic guy, almost, you know, regarded as a scapegoat in the 2015 World Cup. But he played, 66 tests, 43 as captain. That's a lot as captain.
I might be wrong, Dylan Hartley might have overtaken him since, but I think that's the second most games captain for England after Will Carling.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. What a career he's had. But is that the right move? I mean, what do you think going to America?
He always wanted to do it. I spoke to him, I think, over a year ago. I remember his contract was up. And look, he's a player that has left nothing on the field, both at training and in a game. And he's given his body, mind, spirit, everything to the game. Fantastic career. Well, I mean, it's not over, but fantastic career. And I think, you know, I'm sure he would have had offers from Premiership clubs, maybe in France, maybe Japan, but he probably just wanted a different experience. You know, maybe not sort of the regular attrition of rugby that you would get in the top 14 or the Premiership. But obviously, look after yourself financially. And, you know, there's rumours that a few private investors are investing big in American rugby. But look, lifestyle in San Diego, I think it's a great new experience, something that, you know, not a lot of rugby players would have the opportunity to go over to America and see what opportunities lie out there. He's gone to a great, great city. I remember, actually, ironically enough, when I did my first trip to Vegas back in 2008, I think it was, with the lads. So what I loved about England tours, Brax, is, it was great. You go to the Southern Hemisphere, you know, you test yourself against the best, all that sort of stuff. But you need to reroute yourself. So a few of us for a number of years used to reroute ourselves via through the RFU, get your business class flights rerouted to Vegas and LA for a couple of years and then fly back. So you had the business class seats back. So they used to put it on the bill. No, it was great. Anyway, the first time we went over to Vegas, we did a week in Vegas, absolutely stupid. We only did about 3-4 days after that. And then went over to LA. I had a couple of mates in LA, stayed there. We did the 101 up and down. And our last stop was San Diego. And I remember coming away from 3 days in San Diego. And then, you know, we caught a flight back. And I remember actually saying, when I retire, I'm going to coach out in San Diego. I loved it so much. Now, it was a bit of a pipe dream, a bit of a throwaway comment, you know, sort of quite capricious remark. But I enjoyed it so much in terms of just the lifestyle. They love their rugby out there as well. Massive into their rugby and the university there as well. Beach life, obviously speak the same language, don't they, over in America, whereas France and Japan for him might have been a little bit trickier in terms of just trying to embed yourself into the culture. Although that's the sort of challenge a lot of people like. Maybe he thought, you know what, if they speak the same language, it's going to be a bit easier. But a great city, a wonderful place. And I look forward to, you know, to hearing the tales after about 6 months in, to seeing how he thinks it's going, you know, outside of rugby, not interested in that, but and the other stuff. But it's a long way away, though.
It is. I guess he's got family. He's going to take his family, his wife, maybe not work, got kids and stuff. So it's a nice new challenge for him, isn't it, out there?
Really nice. I think, and his wife is a singer. So I think there might be Yeah, there might be a little bit of that in it as well in terms of opportunities over there.
Yeah, of course.
Perspective. Of course. You probably wouldn't get that in Japan or France.
Rocket with Kieran Bracken and Nick Easter.
You're listening to Rocket. This Friday, myself and Kieran will be joined by former Ireland captain, Rory Best. Here's a quick taster of what to expect.
New Zealand are a great team. They got momentum and we got... When you look at the mistakes we made at the start of that game, you know, that wasn't down to a meeting in the morning of the game.
Yeah.
But you're trying to pick holes to go, right, well, look, I'll not get another chance at a World Cup, but Ireland will. And how, as an Irish rugby supporter, can we make sure that they get the semi-final? Because it's now become a massive monkey on our back.
Rocket with Kieran Bracken and Nick Easter, the brand new rugby podcast.
I thought we'd finish off, and it's going to be great speaking to Rory Best as a special edition on this podcast. I've got so much to ask him. God, what a career he's had. But we can ask him that question, you know, why do Ireland sort of peak between World Cups? So that'd be interesting. But before we do, let's just finish off with the latest news about the global calendar. I believe the Premiership clubs and the French clubs they want to keep the winter game for themselves.
Can I just interrupt you there, Brex, actually? Just something sprung into my mind. No, it wasn't on the agenda, but we're free to talk about what we want.
Yeah.
You're talking Rory Best, Irishman, legend of his game, honest, forthright. I'm just going to bring up another Irishman who's probably a little bit more, you know, acerbic of tongue and doesn't hold his punches. Different sport. Did you see it Friday night? Roy Keane. The Manchester United Tottenham game. Now, to be honest, we know what he's like. He's in there. He's grumpy. He's moody. He's, you know, I don't think, you know, what is the side the furthest from negativity? I don't know, but that's the side he's on. No one's good enough. He's cantankerous. He's always angry. But he doesn't pull punches and he's honest. And, you know, I know it's quite satirical sometimes, but actually he does speak a lot of sense. But I just want to ask a question without getting into it. I'm not a football podcast, but it's fascinating whenever he's on. You know, you actually don't want to go out for a cup of tea. We need someone like that in rugby. Do we need a pundit like that in rugby? Obviously not quite as vicious and harsh.
Oh, yeah.
Someone,
in rugby, yeah.
Shall I tell you what, in punditry, when you get the experts, I don't know about how you feel, but the ones that you can see they're veering towards, you know, giving their truthful opinion they'd give behind closed doors. But when the camera's on and they just pull back and sit on the fence a little too often, you know, a lot of them do, is do we need, or does sport always need someone like that just to have the bit of yin
and
yang?
I agree with you. I think we need personalities. I think the closest to that, I think he's pretty good, is Austin Healey every now and again. He does say stuff and you kind of go, really? And then you go, oh, actually, mate, that's a point. He's got a point. I quite like reading some of his articles. I think it's Telegraph. He does make a lot of sense, and he says things a bit controversial, and that's what.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think probably him and Brian Moore.
Brian Moore's good.
Speak their mind within reason. You know, not through bitterness. You know, you don't want like ex-players, you know, who are bitter, and you want them to speak the facts as they see it. And if it's not good enough, you know, like in the case we're discussing, if it's not good enough, why isn't it good enough? And don't hold your punches when you sort of refer to a player, basically.
I can't believe I've just willfully complimented Austin Healey. But we'll just leave it there. We won't move on from that. But I agree with you. You know, I'll tell you who I think might be quite good, or slightly different left field. I know he's a bit of a joker, but I do listen to Joe Marler whenever he talks. I quite like Joe Marler. I think he's a sort of bloke who would like stun BBC commentary on the Six Nations. He'd just say something completely left field, which would make sense, but I don't know whether he's too much of a joker. But someone like him,
if Joe went into that, if he did a bit of
can you imagine
his career, I could see him, he would have quite a bit of fun, as you say, just the non sequiturs, just making something that just doesn't join up with what.
That's the thing.
The presenter's talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
And a bit like Eric Cantona, you know, when he got his award last year and he quoted, was it King Lear? I can't remember. I might be wrong.
How come you listen, you just come up with non sequitur, right? Because I'm sitting at the table, I don't know, a year or so ago, and I said something and my eldest said, oh, that's non sequitur. My wife said, yeah, come on, Kieran. I was like, what the fuck are you on about? Non sequitur. So for those who are like me, who are educated but uneducated, you if you want to explain, it's basically talking like responding.
It just doesn't follow, mate. It just doesn't follow. If you want the best comedy example of non sequiturs, I don't know. I'm thinking of Tom Head. Look at the Naked Gun trilogies. The random sort of comments that are made there, or you know, you don't follow what they're talking about. Like Airplane.
That wasn't a good example of it. Effectively, it's about it's like saying to Joe Marler, "What did you think of the game today?" And him say, and then him going, "Well, you know, the horses go to the they go to get a feed, and they want to do that, and suddenly it's just fucking completely random and nothing to do with it." Which is, I did like his interview. If you could find that, those who haven't seen it, his interview where it went global, it went viral, didn't it? They said, what did they say? So you're disappointed about Harlequins at the weekend, you know, what not winning. He says, well, what did he say? He said, if you get the horse has bolted.
Did he say the horse has bolted? No, we need to get back on the horse. He said, back on the horse.
And you can bring the horse to water. And the horse, it might drink.
We need to give it a bit of food, a bit of nourishment.
A bit of food. And if you want to get back on, you're going to get back on. And the horse might be like, ooh. Yeah, it was like, what's he on about? Well, that went viral. So if you haven't seen it, do have a look at it. Let's just finish off, as we always do. The last serious thing is the global calendar. The English and French clubs want to keep the winter game. They don't want to share it. They don't want to start in January. Interesting also the opportunity of the new World Club Cup and the fact that they want to have it. Is it top six Super Rugby, top four Premiership, the top four in the top 14 and the Pro 14, which means I think Wales wouldn't be represented at all because they wouldn't make the top four. So that's quite interesting whether that will happen in the next few years, you know, the World Club game. But it sounds like for me that the clubs in England and France are going to boycott any opportunity to make it a global calendar, which we all thought they would, didn't we?
Yes, and look, I completely get their standpoint, and I'm not for a global calendar, as you know, Brax. I'm certainly for less games. And the irony in this is, you hear the pro global calendar players, coaches, you know, administrators, you know, even on World Rugby saying, you know, and then we could bring back the sort of old style tours. And it's like, well, they were tours because it was the end of your season, in the middle of ours and vice versa. And they were describing it exactly as the season runs at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, well, hold on a second. How are you going to manufacture that? What, are you going to have a couple of seasons where they're aligned and then what, one season where they're not? That's a complete mess. Mm-hmm. But the big thing, mate, is it's monetizing the game and the club game. So we've spoken about sort of, you know, it being a winter sport and it running in conjunction with sport playing in schools and a community and all that sort of stuff. But if you've got to compete in the summer, just think about it, mate. You've got to compete with Wimbledon, the Open, Euro Championships Euro Champions or World Cup football every 2 years, cricket, test matches in cricket, golf. Well, I mentioned that with the Open, but you know, you've got Henley Regatta, you've got, you know, the polo, all that. So all these events, Ascot, all these events are on, right? Where people actually flock to go. They're an institution in themselves, you know, especially in the hospitality sector and TV covers, that there's going to be very, very little left for rugby. And people go on holiday in August. They go on holiday in July, August, September. You know, we know what it's like. I mean, at Saracens, you never had spectators anyway. But at Quinns, when we had home games in September, we didn't want home games in September. I think Quinns were one of the biggest advocates for the doubleheader, London doubleheader, and it being an away game. So we didn't lose a home game. It was part of the negotiations back when Mark Evans was there. And we only really wanted, we knew out of four games, one would have to be at home. We rejoiced, or shall I say, the marketing department or whatever, rejoiced when there was only one home game in September because we knew people would still be on holiday. And we prefer to sort of, you know, stick them sort of in October and later on in the season. Is monetizing it, mate, for all those reasons, fans being away, other interests, and TV. Are the, you know, TV companies, are they going to pay the same rights to try and fight with the likes of Wimbledon, the Open, the World Cup, all of that sort of stuff. Mainstream, free-to-air TV, broadcasting other sports, and you're going to get BT Sport or Sky or Amazon or whatever.
I mean, it is
the rights of rugby.
It is a tradition, isn't it, during December, the end of December and New Year's, that there's a plethora of rugby games when there's not that much else on. What else is to do?
And you get the bumper crowds in, mate. You know, the New Year games, the Boxing Day, around the Boxing Day fixture, post-Christmas, even pre-Christmas, that's when they all sort of flock to the ground.
And also the style of rugby that's going to be played as well. I think there's something special about playing in the rain, playing in the cold, as opposed to playing in the hard grounds in the sun. You know, the game will change, won't it, if it just becomes a summer sport. So, yeah, look, I don't know. I mean, I'm all for change, but there's something special about a horrible, wet, drizzly night and just before Christmas watching a game.
What sport would ever, you know, there'll be football obviously on telly, but what if you're not a football fan or, you know, you want to have a little bit of variety to your sport watching? It's a winter sport. You know, and New Zealand seemed to cope all right. Did you watch the Blues Chiefs game was played in a deluge of rain?
Oh, yeah.
So,
really good. Some really great rugby out there, isn't it, being played? It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. But should we finish off? We said we were going to, I was going to show you my piece, and you were going to show me your piece on camera. I'm going to get to my pool. Just installed. All right, let me have a look. Let's go downstairs now. All right. You see, I was on Twitter and I saw Matt Dawson. He was on Instagram and he had a picture of his kids in the pool. Or he showed a bit on Instagram of the kids jumping in the pool. Massive pool in this big garden. I thought, bloody hell. Here we go. Let me just see if I can show you my pool. There we go. There it is.
A big
see that? Best way, fast set. That was a bit pre-advertised. There you go. There's my pool.
How did you blow that up, mate? Did you blow that up with your own lungs or with a foot pump?
No, with your own lungs. It's quite clever. Have you got one? It's a hot week, mate. It's a hot week.
I can't. There's too much traffic in the way. My one is probably a meter diameter, mate. It's for the little man.
Right.
It is going to be a hot week, actually. I might have to get a bigger one. But the reason I ask if you blew something that big up with your lungs is my next-door neighbour did, and he literally spent. And all I could hear, this was weeks ago when we first went to lockdown, that hot period.
You thought it was sex next door, did you?
Well, I didn't hear any sort of shrieks or screams, so I knew that wasn't going on. But for about 6 hours, all I could hear was him trying his best, and he wouldn't wait for the foot pump. It was arriving by delivery 2 days later than the pool. And he wouldn't wait for it because his boy was desperate to get into the paddling pool. You know, those, mate, brilliant. Father's Day yesterday, those are sort of sacrifices that don't get talked about too often, do they?
Yeah, you didn't get a present. Your one's too little. I got a present. So let me, do you know what? Even better, I'll have to show you this because this is just fantastic. And if there's ever I get a present and I'm like, that's the best present ever. Okay, this is what I got. Excuse me. All right. So it's a little metal box. So there's the metal box. Okay. And I'm like, well, what's in there? Look at this. Look at that.
Yeah, they got the dairy milk, man.
Oh, how good's that? Look at that. Look at that.
Now, I'm surprised you haven't smashed that in.
No, I have. Look. I have. Seriously.
Mate, you've had 24 hours. Are you kidding? You would have done well rooming with Ugo, mate. You have the willpower. You have the self-discipline.
Yeah, exactly.
The brand new rugby podcast. Rocket with Kieran Bracken and Nick Easter.
Thanks for listening to Rocket. This Friday, myself and Kieran will be joined by Rory Best. Don't forget to subscribe, listen and review.